Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters on the 20th of April 2022. I'm your host Harry, joined today by my good friend John.
Hello Lotus Eaters.
Hello, and today we're going to be talking about the Ramadan riots of peace, how Ethan Klein has been cancelled again and should have taken the warning of one Dr. Peterson, and finally, what happened to beautiful architecture. Before we get into that, just want to make everyone aware, if you are a premium subscriber to the website, you can check out this that's going on later on today, a discussion between a book club, a live book club that Carl and I are doing about Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, about the transgender craze seducing our daughters. So that should be interesting, should be enjoyable, if a little bit dark in places, sadly. Mm-hmm. But without any further ado, let's get into the news.
Yes, so there is some news coming out of Sweden recently. So Sweden, as we know, is the world capital of tolerance and love and happiness and also grenade attacks, which is a bit weird because those
I don't remember seeing that in the tourist brochures.
Yeah, they don't tend to go together, but here we go. So we have a problem here. Dozens arrested at Sweden riots sparked by planned Quran burnings, and these have extended now, as I understand, into a sixth day of riots.
Great.
Weird, isn't it?
And from what I was aware, Sweden's always been described to me as a very peaceful country.
Well, the Swedish people I've met have been lovely people, very tolerant, very inclusive, you know.
But one of the things that tends to go with that is that they tend to be a very homogenous and high trust society. So right. It's almost like if you were to introduce a foreign or alien element into that it might cause some disruptions.
Well, we'll see. I'm just going to go some way into this article and I think you'll enjoy the BBC's take on this, so let's go. More than 40 people have been arrested after violent clashes in Sweden between police and people angry at plans by a far-right group to burn copies of the Quran.
People,
yes.
Okay.
Now, what people do you think might be so angry at the threat of a Quran being burned that they would riot?
Norwegians.
Obviously. Three people were injured in Norrköping on Sunday when officers fired warning shots at rioters, police said. So it must be pretty serious if they're firing warning shots in the middle of a riot.
This is not the sort of typical news you expect to hear out of Sweden.
No, it isn't. You want to hear things about skiing or maybe ABBA or something like that.
Heavy metal.
If you're Harry, yeah. The violence was sparked by a series of rallies organised by the Danish-Swedish politician Rasmus Paludan, who's going to come up later. He says he has burned a copy of Islam's holy book and wants to do so again. Now, obviously, this is clearly provocation here. However, he does have free speech rights to do this sort of thing. In the West, you can even burn the flag, as I understand it, in most Western countries, of the country that you live in. And there's no laws against that sort of thing. It's
enshrined
under freedom of speech. Right. Muslims consider the Quran the sacred word of God and view any intentional damage or show of disrespect towards it as deeply offensive. Saudi Arabia has condemned what it called the deliberate abuse of the Holy Quran by some extremists in Sweden and provocation and incitement against Muslims. Iran and Iraq earlier summoned the Swedish ambassadors to lodge protests. So this is a pretty big deal. It's an international incident, right, this rioting. And one thing I notice is that no one is actually condemning the rioting.
No, there's nothing that I can see where Iraq and Iran have come out and said we definitely don't condone all of these people coming out and burning things other than the Quran.
It seems almost as if they're dehumanizing the people protesting. It's almost like they're taking the narrative, oh well, they're Muslims, if someone burns a Quran they just have to riot and burn down dozens of vehicles and suburbs.
That has been, at least in the mainstream, the prevailing narrative when it comes to mainstream Western publications, this idea that, oh, these Muslims, they just can't help themselves.
Right.
They see a woman's ankle or they see someone say something nasty about the Quran and they fly into a violent rage.
Yeah, and I think that's deeply offensive and actually quite Islamophobic, really, fundamentally.
I mean, yes, if you were going to use that sort of language, I suppose so.
Right, absolutely. And it is a very strange way to take that debate as well. The way that they talk about Muslims in this way, as if they're not human, almost. Now, obviously, yes, I understand that Muslims would be deeply upset by someone committing what they see as blasphemy against the Quran. But the thing is, many people are deeply upset about many things for many reasons all over the world, not just individuals, but also groups of people. And most people do not react by rioting and grenade attacks and things like this.
In doing this, they are taking the line of reasoning that these are foreign barbarians and just not using that specific language right. for it, and then persecuting anybody who then does come out and use that specific mm-hmm. language for it, despite the fact they're basically saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like, well, of course, offended people don't riot, but offended Muslims, they can only riot, is almost the what comes through from these narratives.
It comes naturally
to I really don't like that. But anyway, let's move on with it. So what's actually happening on the ground? Sweden's national police chief, Anders Thornberg, said he had never seen such violent riots following Sunday's clashes in Norrköping, which is about 160 kilometres, 99 miles, southwest of Stockholm and nearby Linköping. The two cities also witnessed riots on Friday, along with the Stockholm suburb of Rinkeby and the western city of Örebro. So, across the country. Quite crazy.
It's managed to reach from one side to the other, mm-hmm. my goodness.
On Saturday, there was a riot in the southern city of Malmö. On Monday, police said 26 police officers and 14 members of the public had been injured in the violence, and that more than 20 vehicles had been damaged or destroyed. They said that around 200 people had been involved in the violence, adding they believed it was organised by networks of criminal gangs. Some of the individuals are already known to police and Sweden's security service, SAPO.
Very interesting. I mean, I mention, we mention how the people are being treated and how it's sort of like they're treating it as the natural response to riots, because, I mean... Sadly, this is how these sorts of things tend to end up. But I do find it interesting because there is something that you can contrast it to. Because I mentioned heavy metal, not to go too far off topic. Back in the day, I think back in the mid-2000s, a band that I enjoy called Behemoth, who are Polish, played a gig in their native Poland where, as part of the performance, they ripped up a Bible on stage, and it caused a lot of controversy, and I believe that they may be banned from actually performing there. Well, they might even have they may even be banned from entering the country again, but I don't remember there being any riots,
right?
Or at least if there was, please correct me, but certainly nothing to this scale.
No, that's very true. And you just note the sort of kid gloves with which they're writing this article. It's sort of like, oh well, the Quran burning was threatened and Muslims don't like Quran burning, and then people rioted. 200 people were involved in the violence and so on and so forth. It's like, interesting.
It's almost infantilizing.
Yes, and but someone can always one-up the BBC, and this time it is NPR. This is an incredible article because they go through the entire article talking about Sweden without mentioning the M word or the I word once. Here we go. Sweden links riots to criminal gangs that target police, and a nice big spread of burnings, buildings and police and so on. Not exactly what you expect to get out of Sweden. Swedish police said Monday that the riots that have shaken several cities and towns in the Nordic country are extremely serious crimes against society and suspect some protesters are linked to criminal gangs that intentionally target police. That's probably true. Sweden, a nation of 10 million, which is quite small, Britain being, what, 70 million by comparison, just about?
66, I believe, is the official
The last
figures.
Census figure, yes. Has seen unrest, scuffles, arson and violence since Thursday that has left some police officers and protesters injured. It was triggered by Danish far-right politician Rasmus Paludan's meetings and planned Quran burnings across the country. So I just want to point out something here, which most people probably have missed. In these statements, right, it has seen unrest. This is sort of broken out. It's very passive. And then it was triggered by Danish far-right politicians Rasmus Paludan's meetings and planned Quran burning. So it's really pointing the finger of blame, right? This is where the whole story starts. It's with the bad far-rightist.
Despite the fact that in these countries he should, whether or not it offends people, have every right to organise burnings of whatever books that he wants. As much as generally speaking, I don't condone burning, you are still allowed to.
Right. You'll notice we're not burning any books live on air. That should show where we stand on the book burning issue. Mm-hmm. But at least we haven't yet, as far as I'm aware.
I think if we get some queer theory in, I might be tempted.
But there we go. We suspect that those involved in the riots have links to criminal gangs. They're known to police. I've been in touch with the public prosecutor to prosecute these individuals. So that sounds good, at least. And these broke out in Malmö as well, the latest ones. Again, it's always Malmö hitting the headlines when it comes to rioting. And of course, this isn't new. If we go to the next article, from November 2019, BBC... Sweden's 100 explosions this year. What's going on?
I wonder what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And this is a fabulous article because, again, they go through the whole article and you just want, it's maddening reading it. So look out for the things they don't mention.
Yeah, I mean, just that title alone, what's going on, as if the BBC are completely in the dark and nobody has any idea what it could be. People are just spontaneously combusting.
But one thing I like about this article, apart from the spontaneous combustion reference, is the way that it actually brings home how this is changing everyday life for some ordinary people who live in Sweden who have nothing to do with far-right extremist groups or with Quran burnings or with the Muslim minorities. Just going about their day-to-day lives and 100 explosions a year, what does that mean? So let's get into it. When three explosions took place in one night across different parts of Stockholm last month, it came as a shock to residents. There had been blasts in other city suburbs, but never on their doorstep. Swedish police are dealing with unprecedented levels of attacks, targeting city centre locations too. The bomb squad was called to deal with 97 explosions in the first 9 months of this year. I grew up here, and you feel like that environment gets violated, said Joel, 22.
Well, of course.
I don't think much can violate your environment more than explosions and bombs.
Yeah, it wouldn't feel particularly safe. And I can only imagine growing up in a place like that before certain migrations were made, shall we say, this was probably a very peaceful place to live and probably very community-orientated.
And he continues, the front door of his apartment block in the central Stockholm neighbourhood of Södermalm was blown out. His front door was blown out and windows were shattered along the street. Could you imagine that?
That'd be awful. I'd be moving, but then again, if this is something that's starting to be a problem nationwide, the question is, where
will
do you move to?
Will it catch up with you? Yeah, exactly. And then they carry on. Another headline. Who is to blame? Who could it be? Who could it possibly be? This category of crime was not even logged prior to 2017. Then, in 2018, there were 162 explosions. And in the past 2 months alone, the bomb squad have been called to almost 30.
Do we have any figures on deaths caused by these explosions, or is it
not in this segment?
Okay,
but yeah, it's quite obvious that there has been none of this type of crime. Then all of a sudden, bam, it's exploded. Mm. So yeah, and we get a bit more detail from Linda Straff, head of intelligence at Sweden's National Operations Department. Bangers, improvised explosives, and hand grenades are behind most of the blasts. Hand grenades. The attacks are usually carried out by criminal gangs to scare rival groups or their close friends or family, she says. This is a serious situation, but most people shouldn't be worried because they are not going to be affected.
Don't worry about all the explosions going around in your neighbourhood. They probably won't catch you.
It's crazy.
This is so slimy.
This is Swedish levels of nothing to see here, guys. Mm. A 20-year-old let me continue. Teams have been sent to work with gang crime specialists in the US, Germany and the Netherlands. And they are liaising with Swedish military experts who dealt with explosives in Africa and Afghanistan. Yeah, that's right, you're literally turning Sweden into a war zone. Fabulous. A 20-year-old passerby was treated in hospital when a bomb targeted a grocery shop in the historic university city of Lund. And 25 people were hurt when a block of flats was targeted in the central town of Linköping. Södermalm is a former working-class area that has become increasingly gentrified. Vintage boutiques and vegan delicatessens break up grids of mustard and terracotta-painted apartment blocks. The building targeted is opposite a park and close to a school. Immediately afterwards, when police closed off the streets and I walked with my two kids to preschool, I got really scared, said Malin Bradshaw, who lives a few doors down.
It is very, very interesting and very important to see the information that they're highlighting versus what they're not, because by the way that that whole paragraph is phrased and what it brings up, you would think that it's working class people annoyed that they've been priced out of their area.
Yeah, it's anarchist revolutionaries or the new communists or something like that, the Bolshevik Freedom Party or something. No arrests have been made concerning this incident and police will not comment on potential motives. I bet they won't.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah. And then another one. Who are Sweden's criminal gangs? And again, what don't they mention here? Police say the criminals involved are part of the same gangs behind an increase in gun crime. Oh, so another problem. Often connected to the drugs trade. Sweden saw 45 deadly shootings in 2018, compared with just 17 in 2011. So that's gone up, like, what, three times?
Mm.
Pretty big. But why they have added explosives to their arsenal is unclear.
Sure, it's the same people.
Yes, indeed. Swedish police do not record or release the ethnicity of suspects or convicted criminals. But intelligence chief Linda Straff says many do share a similar profile. They have grown up in Sweden, and they are from socioeconomically weak groups, socioeconomically weak areas, and many are perhaps second or third generation immigrants, she says.
Well, I mean, obviously we know what this is all going on about. This is about the high immigration of Muslims into the country for the most part. And this is something that I've covered recently on a different segment when we were talking about the murder of David Amos, Ali, whatever his name was, who, despite growing up in England, despite growing up away from that culture for the most part, these people still see themselves primarily, first and foremost, for Islam. Whether or not they are first, second, or even third generation immigrants, they do not see themselves, or at least these types who are committing these, they do not see themselves as belonging to the nation that they grew up in.
No, absolutely. Ideological debates about immigration have intensified since Sweden took in the highest number of asylum seekers per capita in the EU during the migrant crisis of 2015.
Oh, there you go.
But Ms. Straff says it's not correct to suggest new arrivals are typically involved in gang networks.
Even ones that they might form?
Indeed. Apparently not. Yeah, so for those who have been asleep for the last 10 years, there was the Syrian civil war, which is still ongoing, by the way. But there were huge waves of migration as a result of that, and Angela Merkel unilaterally took in 1 million. Many other EU countries were then forced to follow suit.
We can do it.
The ones who didn't, which is Poland and Hungary, have since been subject to relentless litigation from the EU and so on, mainly on these grounds.
But also seem to be faring much better socially within the nations.
Well, they're not having 100 hand grenade attacks a year.
I mean, that's something, isn't it?
But you could argue, of course, that it's just part and parcel of living in a modern city.
Certainly wouldn't want to think so, but sadly...
I'll just take two more quotes from this article. So, for many on the political right, they say, the explosions add fuel to their argument that Sweden has struggled to integrate migrants over the past decades.
I mean, it's just blatant evidence, but okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that guy throwing the grenade there doesn't look very integrated.
He's the victim.
Of course.
He's the victim of Sweden it's not doing a good enough job.
It's because he's from a socioeconomically weak area, don't you know?
Oh, yes.
Right. And then they close with a comment, did Swedish media hush it up? And they talk about this. Yes, did Swedish media? Swedish media hush it up. Did Swedish media hush it up? BBC, what is the one thing you have not mentioned once in this article?
That's right.
It's Islam. Right. Haven't mentioned it at all. Nothing to do with the background. That is completely irrelevant. It's all about socioeconomic and material factors, of course. Right. Got it. And this is Groundhog Day, these riots we're talking about, because the same thing happened in 2020. Look. On August 2020, riots broke out in the Swedish cities of Malmö and Ronneby after Swedish police prevented Rasmus Paludan, the same Danish politician, from entering the country, and far-right anti-immigration activists held protests and burned the Quran. In response, a mob of 300 people gathered in protest, burned tyres, threw rocks and chunks of concrete at the police, and smashed bus shelters, and witnesses heard shouts of Allahu Akbar and La ilaha illallah. A prominent Malmo imam responded, those who are acting in this way have nothing to do with Islam.
Might want to tell them that.
Yeah. Of course, Sweden is apparently the one at fault here for allowing the Danish politician to exercise his rights to freedom of speech in this manner. As we see Saudi Arabia's take on it. Yep, this is all bad. And yeah, what do you expect? Saudi Arabia condemns abuse of Holy Quran. If you go to the next one, Indonesia. Yep, Indonesia also condemns the burning of the Holy Quran. And these four comments that they released in the statement are very revealing, I think. Indonesia condemns the burning of the Holy Quran in Sweden by Rasmus Paludan, a Danish politician, in the cities of Linköping and Norrköping. Rasmus Paludan carried out similar acts of blasphemy on April 15, 2022, in the cities of Rinkeby and Örebro, Sweden. Using the argument for freedom of expression as a pretext to insult the religion and belief of a group is an irresponsible and uncommendable act. I agree, but is it an illegal act?
No.
Right. Is it something that is just that justifies 300 people setting a city ablaze and trashing dozens of vehicles and injuring dozens of police?
I mean, when the undermining of the Christian faith in the Western world is basically just something that goes on a normal day-to-day basis, it's something that you're allowed to do. I don't remember all of the Christians gathering up together and rioting and destroying other people's property.
But finally, point four, last but not least, is slightly responsible, which is the Indonesian embassy in Stockholm appeals to all Indonesian citizens and diaspora in Sweden not to be provoked. Good. And to avoid actions that may potentially violate Swedish laws and regulations. Great, right.
That's the last point, though.
True, but these people do have agency, and it's proper that they mention that. I don't think the Saudi Arabians were quite so... I don't think they cared.
Forgiving.
Yes, and Pakistan also condemned the Quran burnings. Finally, let's just have a look at this list. List of grenade attacks in Sweden. We'll just scroll down. So we've got a little graph there showing how they've precipitately risen in recent years from virtually none and all in Malmö to loads and many in Stockholm now this year. Yeah, and if we scroll down, they have lists for each year, and you find there's basically four attacks in 20 years, and then all of a sudden, boom.
Quite literally.
These are all grenade attacks, not explosives, not IEDs. No, these are all grenades.
Just people lobbing grenades at one another.
Yes, and the final example I wanted to take was from this Euronews article, which is an account of a Swedish citizen. So on a Sunday this January, Daniel Cuevas Zuniga, a 63-year-old Chilean living in Sweden, was cycling home in Varbygård, a suburb of Stockholm, with his wife. He saw an object on the bike path and reached down to pick it up. It was a hand grenade!
Oh, fun.
It exploded and Zuniga died from his injuries. The blast was so strong it threw his wife off her bicycle and in front of him.
Jesus Christ, just the fact, the idea that you can just be cycling down back home and there's just a hand grenade on the floor.
A live hand grenade that's about to explode, yeah.
A live hand grenade, and honestly, it's awful that that happened to him, but imagine if it had been a child as well.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that all of the news reports seem to be refusing to mention people dying as a result of these mysterious criminal gang-related mm-hmm. explosions, we have from here first-hand accounts of people who have died as a result
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely, and it's almost as if they're being sacrificed in the name of political correctness. If we go to the next one.
Aren't we all?
So actually, Josh and yourself did a premium podcast on the idea of 21st century human sacrifice, which I think points to this.
Yes, what we were speaking about primarily was in regards to the idea of people being sacrificed in a sense, or at least sacrificing part of themselves to the state through, say, taxes mm-hmm. and public service and things like that. But certainly the state is the ones imposing this on us. I mean, time and time again, you get survey after survey. Just the average person on the street does not want this happening.
No, of course not.
They do not want all of these immigrants coming in and causing social harm and even greater harm beyond that. And
well, it's difficult, I think, to integrate people who think that a grenade attack is a legitimate way to protest about something that offends you.
Yes, strangely, the average man on the street is far more aware of how difficult it is for these people to integrate than the average politician.
Probably because they live amongst them.
Yes, whereas the average politician, such as in England, is living in Westminster, happily cordoned away from all of this sort of incidents, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is being imposed on us by the state, and I hate it. I hate every second of it, personally.
Likewise.
All right, then. So let's move on. So, oh dear, oh dear, if it isn't the pesky consequences of my own actions. He was warned, he was told time and time again that this was going to happen, but Ethan Klein did not listen. The once fun and, dare I even say, interesting H3H3 has been going through somewhat of a fall from grace over the past few mm-hmm. years. I don't know how familiar you are.
Not particularly familiar. I've only heard it tangentially.
Honestly, it's one of those situations where I feel I did myself a disservice by being a fan of his back in the day, because my support, along with many others' supports, is just what led to him having the platform that he has now.
Mm-hmm.
But he has been spending the past few years changing tune from his formerly anti-SJWAs and courting a whole new audience of leftists, and we know how reliable and loyal leftists tend to be. And he's even collaborated with socialist royalty, the multi-millionaire real estate owner Hassan Piker. And now, as always, the left has come to eat itself. Before I get into the actual substance of this segment, though, I'd just like to draw your attention to this article that came out last March. We've republished it recently with an audio voiceover for our Silver Tier subscribers by Hannah Gall, talking about no happiness in the absence of responsibility. And I think that's highly relevant. One, mm-hmm. because it's related to Jordan Peterson's most recent book, Beyond Order, and also that Ethan Klein is a man who isn't taking responsibility and certainly does not seem happy, that's for sure. So the focal point of this recent controversy has been one of the episodes of the H3 podcast, most recently rebranded into H3TV, where he got into a little bit of trouble with his own fan base for making some quote-unquote homophobic comments. We can see here Keemstar made a compilation of them that's 7 minutes long, Keemstar being Ethan Klein's greatest nemesis that Ethan has tried to cancel numerous times, including getting his sponsors taken off of him. So I just thought we'd take about a minute of this and show the sorts of things he was saying on a more recent podcast. And apologies for having to hear Ethan Klein in the first place. I don't do this lightly, trust me.
Roll it.
He has some anal leaking. Well, now, we were saying, well, if he's getting blasted in the ass hard enough, potentially, you may need to wear a diaper. And a lot of you will say, like, okay, we've had a debate, like, I don't think vaginas increase in size from sex, but assholes actually do. If you have a lot of anal sex, that's you can true. Actually blast open your anus. Frequent anal sex can result in a blasted
this
open
is
asshole.
Eyebrow content, isn't it?
Maybe he's just got railed real hard the night before. He's a power bottom.
No, that would...
That's an option. Power bottom.
So wouldn't that mean that the diapers aren't for him, though?
No, if he's on the bottom, he's getting railed. That he's an enthusiastic receiver. Oh, my
so
God.
So he's gay.
Power bottom is a guy who likes to wildly ride the peg of another dude.
What do you think
of that? Power bottom is a guy who likes to wildly ride the peg of another dude while he jacks you off until both have boner-gasms.
Yeah. Get down to the power bottom of things here on the H3 podcast. I love you guys so much, but y'all really need some LGBTQT.
Why? What did
Shut up.
So that was a very highbrow discussion going on. For context, what they were talking about, if you want to move over to the next one, just so we can see the actual thing this was taken from. Yeah, this was taken from H3TV number 31, where they were discussing James Charles, a former influencer who I don't believe has been relevant in the slightest for quite a long time, wearing nappies for all of our American audience. That is the English term for diapers. Ethan joked that this may be because he's a bottom, because James Charles is gay, and thought that, you know, and went on to that sort of discussion that they were going on right there. He was also having that discussion with his producer, Dan, who gets caught up in a lot of this. But while he was doing that discussion, his audience, which, as we all know, nowadays are leftists, were not particularly happy with the sorts of comments that he was making. While I didn't think it was a particularly funny discussion, while I didn't think it was particularly highbrow, I don't really take any offense personally with him making those sorts of comments. He's just speculating in a casual conversation with some mates. I don't want to defend him or anything, but I just personally don't see much objectionable about that. But the funny thing is that this is all after Ethan recently, I think himself, came out saying he had to wear nappies because of some of his adult nappies because of his own health problems that he's been experiencing. And then, because they take calls throughout the show, a caller called in and had some issues with that. So let's hear some of the discussion that he had with this caller.
Hey, Matt. Oh, so Matt, wow. What have
that's
I got wrong?
I know often you feel inclined to describe someone where you think they might be a bottom. And I think that that's often a misconception, that, like, bottoms may be passive or the...
Well, I just mean that he likes...
the partner.
I just mean that he likes to take it up the butt.
But how can you know that about someone?
Well, that was just a theory about because he wears diapers. It's just a theory.
No, there have been times, I think one that comes to mind was maybe Jordan Peterson that you described as probably being someone that would be a bottom. That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. But, like, I've heard you at times maybe say, like, oh, this is someone that might be a bottom. You can't always tell, like, who's the top, who's the bottom.
So do you find it offensive if I say – by being like, oh, he's probably a bottom? Is that the problem?
Absolutely.
It's offensive.
So, Ethan, this is exactly what you wanted in the end. This is the sort of people that you were courting the whole time, the sorts of people you make a few jokes and they get very offended and feel the need to make their offense known. But to be fair, there is some questionable stuff that goes on here because Ethan starts to ask some rather inappropriate questions, I would find. So let's play some of that.
That's all I'm asking for, is just be a little more conscious of it.
So would you consider yourself a top or a bottom, or you don't do that, the labels?
And I mean this with all peace and love and with respect, Ethan. It's none of your business.
But you have a preference one way or the other.
But that's another dangerous assumption, too.
Can I guess? Will you tell me if it's right, if I guess right?
No.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to get into it, Matt. But we all know which one you prefer.
So, bit of a weird line of questioning to go down. I know that it was kind of relevant and on topic, but the guy makes it very clear. I don't want to talk about my own preferences. He's like, well, I'm gonna guess anyway. And he does seem, as with everything he does nowadays, very bitter, very tired, almost annoyed at the idea that he's getting this pushback. And it's like, Ethan, this is what's been coming for you this whole time. You seemingly didn't understand this. And he has to consistently throughout the podcast reaffirm his allyship, because that's all he has to do. He has to just say, I'm an ally. Mm-hmm. Because I always feel that this seems to me to be a reaction to the fact that back in the day he did court quite probably a more conservative or at least anti-SJW crowd with the fact that he had lots of anti-SJW content. And he seems to be going so far left as an attempt to almost make up for that to his more to the audience that he's got recently. And yeah, he does sound fed up and defeated. And then later on in the podcast, him and his producer Dan just start telling the audience to shut up and go away. So let's hear that.
Apologies to whatever his name was. Apparently I was homophobic to him, but whatever. What can you do? People say it was gross and disappointing. Saying you can guess if Matt is a power bottom by his voice is so gross. But I was right. That was the point. Wasn't I? He admitted.
Yeah, of course you were right. And honestly, just so over these f***ing people. Shut the f*** up! Shut up! It's a f***ing entertaining show. Shut the f*** up.
Someone says, I don't know what's up.
So disappointing.
Someone said,
grow up. Jesus fucking Christ.
Dan.
I don't know what's up with Ethan today, but something's off. Bad vibes this episode.
Shut the f*** up. Unsubscribe. Go away. Jesus Christ.
It's so childish.
Yeah.
It's so childish. I could almost feel Dan trying so hard not to just throw out an F slur.
Which one is Dan?
Dan is the producer telling them to shut the F up.
Right.
Ethan is the guy, is the fat slob.
Yes.
Sitting behind, chewing into his microphone. And then he just goes on to the ultimate defense of whenever you know that you're in the tip with your own audience and just says, don't like it? Don't watch it.
I think some of y'all are way too fucking sensitive for the show. To be totally honest, like people in this thread who are saying they're grossed out and whatever, I think this with peace and love, you might be too sensitive to watch this show. If you're watching this show and you're perpetually offended by things I'm saying, you may want to just stop watching.
That's how you know you've won the argument, isn't it? When you just go, just don't watch it anymore, guys.
Yeah.
But the frustration is obvious. And Ethan, this is what you have asked for. If you want to just go back onto the actual page itself, John, I would just like you to just take the timeline all the way to the end of the video, just so we can see what it is that they end on. No, like right at the very end when they're finished. They just end on a big pride flag to let you know that despite everything, they're still allies. That we're still on your side, guys. We might have just spent the entire past 3 hours making fun of you and telling you to go away, shut the F up, and stop watching.
That's the conservative pride flag.
That is the conservative pride flag. But there's just one thing I want to know about H3, the podcast and everything. Why? I know you've obviously never watched it, and God bless for doing so.
God help you here, I'm afraid.
But why do people even still watch this absolute crap? They all have terrible mic etiquette. Ethan is constantly smacking his lips and belching straight into the microphone. They all sound so miserable and low energy. I just don't understand why people even still watch it, to be perfectly honest. But
isn't it the first mover advantage sort of thing, that he was one of the earlier people to get into the podcasting game, and so he attracted his following then, and simply due to the principle of mass, he's been able to retain.
I mean, he started his podcast at the arse end of 2016, so I don't know how early, so to speak, that is in the game, but he had already built up a dedicated audience by that point with his edited videos that he put on his old channel, H3H3 Productions. Mm-hmm. And as a result...
So he was an early mover on YouTube then? Or
relatively, yes. Right. He built up a good audience and they just sort of tagged along mm-hmm. with him to the podcast. And then over the course of the podcast, a lot of those early followers dropped off when they saw that Ethan was not the funny, edited, ha-ha man mm-hmm. that they had seen on YouTube, but instead this bitter, dull, boring person who seemingly hates the fact that he has to appeal to people in his content anymore, and now just seems, honestly, I don't understand why he doesn't just retire, because he doesn't seem to be getting any enjoyment out of it, and certainly not when your entire audience turns against you as a result. So for instance, we've got a few people after a whole segment where Ethan mocks gay men for having anal sex. Someone commented politely and told them to think about the way they were talking about the LGBT community. Dan promptly told him to shut up. Ethan swiftly agreed, getting really sick of this S. And this is what you should have expected. This is the audience that you are targeting. If we move along, there's more people just saying to purposefully know and recruit a queer and gay fan base just to S all over them and perpetuate horrific stereotypes about gay men is a choice. H3 himself did respond to this on a follow-up podcast and basically just said, I've not purposefully and knowingly recruited queer and gay fan base. Well, you have gone out of your way to show yourself as an ally, to show support, and then consistently say that you're moving further and further to the left. So you've got to acknowledge that that does come with these kinds of people who do just acknowledge themselves as being queer. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a bit of a facetious response that he gave to it. There's this hilarious...
Well, he certainly can be accused of pandering.
Yes, pandering is probably the best term for it. He then is accused of this, which is... Ethan and Dan mocking the community, saying, how do you know we're not part of the community, is a right-leaning dog whistle to mock us. They're trying to disregard our feelings. They're not allies. When someone shows you who they truly are, believe them. So joking, a few jokes here and there, is now a right-leaning dog whistle. Once again, I don't agree with any of this stuff that people are saying, but this is what he asked for. This is the audience that he has courted and pandered to for the past 2 or so years, possibly even longer than that. And then, of course, because he is his absolute nemesis, Keemstar's been having a field day with all of this. Keemstar trying to portray himself as the good guy in this situation as well. Ethan's lost his mind. I, Keemstar, you know, the bad guy, would never say any of this horrible stuff. I legitimately was offended, and I'm not even gay. Obvious BS. Let's be perfectly honest. This is Keemstar, but he's not missing the opportunity to...
So who is Keemstar for the benefit of viewers who haven't had the privilege of encountering him?
Keemstar is the host of a YouTube drama show called Drama Alert, where he reports on YouTube-based news, and he is often...
So that's his career, right?
That is his career.
It's this sort of drama.
Yes, and he has previously got into a lot of controversy, among other things, for saying things like the N-word. And Ethan Klein himself has accused him of some pretty heinous things in the past. And I will not say that Keemstar is like some angel or anything, but even among the bad things that he'd done, Ethan had vastly shown it out of context. He basically accused him of contributing to the suicide of a YouTuber called Etika for an interview that Keem had with him a month before he killed himself, where Keem was like, oh, well, if you feel that bad about everything, why don't you just take that final step, which is an insensitive thing to say. But then a month later, him doing something, him actually committing suicide, I don't think is something that you can put full responsibility on Keemstar for, and as a result tried to get him get his sponsors removed from Keemstar, which actually happened for a time, and people were freaking out at this because it's like, Ethan, don't do Adpocalypse 2.0 or even 3.0 when you were one of the ones back in the day going against all of this. And even back in the day, Ethan Klein supported PewDiePie after he said the N-word on that stream, which caused the Adpocalypse. So Ethan has basically gone against all of his former principles. And there's just a few other tweets of Keem trying to take the high road in this situation. And then we come to Ethan's half-hearted Twitter apology to my LGBTQ plus fans. I'm sorry for comments on today's show. The sexualization of gay men and the grouping of tops and bottoms is a stereotype that I'll be trying to unlearn. Apologies to the caller too, who I shouldn't have pressed inappropriately. Hope you guys know I always mean well.
It's almost a cookie cutter statement at this point, isn't it? Oh, you've seen so many.
Very much so, especially when you see his actual apology on stream when they did the, of course, obligatory apology stream. Just scroll down so we can see any of the like and dislike ratio on this. You can see 1 million views, only 31K. Oh, you've actually got the dislike as well. Actually, I was surprised that it was only 31K. I thought the dislike would be a bit higher, but fair play. But
well, the dislikes here are only indicative, but that's another choice. That's, since YouTube removed the dislike button, you know how to get extensions to see them, and they basically estimate what the dislikes are based on the dislikes of users who use those extensions.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so they do actually lie in this apology. Dan says that he didn't do the whole gay voice lisp thing, even though he clearly did in that audio that we could hear. They get angry. They also try to fob off the anger and take all responsibility off themselves by going, don't you understand? There's an anti-gay bill going on in Florida right now. How can you be angry at me? They are truly cowards. And then they just say this, which is going to make yourself seem like you've definitely not done anything wrong, or at least don't. You definitely know that you've done something wrong by your own standards.
Like me and Dan, we're on your fucking team. There, if you don't think me and Dan are on your team, you have no allies. You have there's nobody left to fight for you. If you think that me and Dan are actively homo, like I understand I can hold some like homophobic like to say, oh, you think it's okay to make that joke? It's like, I get it. I won't do that again. I understand that it was offensive. But you this label of homophobic and racist, if you think me and Dan are not on your team, then you fucking, there's nobody on your team. There really isn't.
He kind of has a point.
It's true, but at the same time, how do you apologize to your audience who are very angry at you? Is you shout at them and tell them, without me, you're nothing. You've got no one. Is that really going to bring them back on side? Mm-hmm. And of course, it all...
Well, he's, I think, very ineloquently actually making a reasonable point there, which is that he's saying that he might be passively homophobic in the sense of having implicit homophobic biases, which is something that the left believe in, but he's not actively homophobic in the sense that he doesn't go out of his way to belittle and insult gay people or discriminate against them, etc., etc.
While that is all true, and I agree... His audience does not,
of course not,
which is the important thing as far as it goes for his sponsors.
Well, they don't. They reject that dichotomy between those two things, which is one of the main reasons that they are so insufferable to talk to, because they view that having an implicit homophobic bias as being the same as like being someone who's literally lynched a gay man. Or thrown stones.
Well, they see jokes and words as violence. So in making those jokes, for all we know, that Matt caller might have gone and hung himself immediately after for the violence that Ethan had done to him by questioning him on whether he was a top or a bottom. Mm-hmm. That's how they view it. But then this happened.
This isn't too far. It's too much. Sorry, Gary Stans. Today we have no sponsors because... I am an existential threat to gay rights and all progress. So, of course, our wonderful fans have taken it upon themselves to write all of our sponsors and to have them not sponsor or not to support us. So we are, I'm very, you know, I'll just say this. I'm very thankful to our members. It makes this show kind of bulletproof to stuff like this, even though it's painful and emotionally, it's just painful that, you know, people would do that. There it is. And you know, the other thing is like, you expect a little more of the sponsors in a way, but I get it. There is, you know, it's just transactional for them, but you know, I feel like I put so much into the good our good partners, and it's kind of crazy when they just drop you like a bag of dirt when over some bullshit, but there you go.
So defeated, isn't he? But with fans like that, who needs enemies if they're going to be the ones to call up your sponsors and get you cancelled off of them? But as I said, you reap what you sow. So Keemstar pointing out that in 2020, Ethan attacked his sponsors, starting a trend of YouTubers going after sponsors. Now that it's happened to him, he's crying about it. And there's the video from that where he does do that, which is the content nuke that he dropped on Keemstar a few years ago. I've got the link up, just the next one. Not got any clips from it or anything. But yeah, so the it seems that Ethan still isn't in the good books of his audience, even after apologising, then moaning on his latest episode about how all his sponsors dropped out because his subreddit is still...
Apologising never works to these
No, people. No, of course it doesn't. I think he would know this by now. But in the Reddit post, they're making fun of him again. John, if you want to move along. Yeah, the moment Ethan realised he was about to get cancelled again and again and again, which he should know by now. But this is interesting because Ethan was warned. Ethan was warned not even too long ago. It didn't take very long for his chickens to come to roost. Mm. Because here's a video that we did on it back in January 2017, talking about Ethan Klein betraying Jordan Peterson. And I'd just like to read some of the excerpts of what happened back then, because Ethan decided to delete the videos that he had back in the day interviewing Jordan Peterson, where he said that he was an interesting guy, had very insightful, and because of the fact that he was basically signaling to his followers, see, I'm on your side. I don't even want to any videos of me associating with this man up anymore. And Jordan Peterson had this to say in response. We had a good conversation. I enjoyed meeting you and talking with you. What have I said precisely that motivated your actions and your accusations? Deleting our discussion, an honest question. Finally, you might seriously consider providing me with the footage so I can post it. Also, I should warn you that those who engage in cancel culture generally live to regret it. Ooh. I'm not going to come after you, except politely, in this Twitter stream, but the chickens will definitely come home to roost. You will be held to higher and higher and soon impossible to maintain ethical standards by the very mob you currently wish to please. Then you will make a mistake and they will devour you with glee. Please take this warning seriously. I liked you. You know, you knew this was coming, Ethan.
It was only 3 months ago as well.
Yes, only 3 months ago. And you should have listened, but you didn't. And to end all this off, I thought I'd end up with Sophia Narwitz, who just says, getting some real bottom energy from Ethan Klein right here. And I think that sums it up, really.
Well, that was quite a segment.
Sorry to put you through all of the anal leakage talk.
I'd almost managed to forget it. Right. Let's move on to something beautiful. Let's talk about architecture, because architecture is something that affects all of us. Unless you're our one subscriber who is a Mongolian nomad living in the distant steppe and accessing our podcast via Starlink, you will live in an architecture, you will go to work in an architecture, or even go to school in an architecture. So architecture is important. It's part of our everyday lives.
We are in architecture right now.
We are
indeed.
And
from the outside, it's not particularly attractive architecture, I'll say that.
And I think there is a trend which anyone with their eyes open will have noticed by now. I've noticed, you've noticed, people in the office have noticed. In fact, everyone except this Mongolian steppe herder seem to have noticed. And that's that when you walk around Europe's great cities, the old stuff is beautiful. But the new stuff, not so much.
No.
And so I want to just run through some of the architectural crimes that have been committed. And there is this beautiful Twitter handle that I've discovered called Architects Against Humanity.
I think I've seen some of their stuff before. They do post some beautiful buildings and then some not so beautiful buildings.
Exactly. And we're just going to take a look at some of them to just sort of hammer home what I really mean about this. So they begin here. Look at this. It's absolutely fantastic, isn't it?
That's gorgeous. That's somewhere that if you lived there, you would be proud to look up at the skyline and see the achievements of the civilization that you're part of.
We don't want any of that. No, absolutely not. Let's go to the next one. This is what architects want. Look, I designed an awesome new building. It's so innovative and sustainable. It's ugly and will be demolished within a century. Did I mention it's sustainable? It's terrible. And then we go to the next one. So for regular people, good architecture is about beauty, but for contemporary architects, it's an intellectual game. And as we can see here, generally speaking, the public hate it. Go to the next one. Again, another beautiful town. This one's Dubrovnik in Croatia.
Gorgeous.
Just your daily reminder that in 100 years, modernism has not produced a beautiful town.
No, and this has been presumably around for a good few hundred years, and people care enough about it to sustain it out of their own pocket.
Not as well. Dubrovnik, it's not the third world, but it's also not the richest place in the world. It doesn't take that much to build and maintain a beautiful city. All it takes, really, fundamentally, is, first of all, you build something pretty in the first place, and then you have the civic pride to look after it.
Yeah, there's willpower, and it's also recognizing I think it's something that our own generation, elements of it, have struggled with, recognizing that you are standing on the shoulders of giants. Mm. It's the Burkean idea of life is a pact.
It's a legacy.
Dead. Yeah, it's the dead, the living, and the unborn. This is what the dead provided us. Mm. That's part of our history, and we don't have any right to build anything that won't stand up like this for our own children. Well, we have the right, you could say.
But this is the thing.
Why would you want to? The way that
we alter our architectural landscape is a conversation between past and present. So it's not as simple as, don't want what these old dead white men built. Let's get rid of all of it and replace it with concrete. You don't have the right to do that.
Cubes.
Like, that's a crime against the legacy of those people and a crime against everyone you're living with as well. If we go to the next one. This is a classic contrast. The old municipal theatre of Corfu, bombarded by the Nazis and demolished afterwards, versus the new municipal theatre of Corfu, built in the same place to replace the old. And you just see a beautiful old sort of classical building and a block.
See, I don't understand why in this situation, other than for pure efficiency's sake, why they couldn't just try and recreate the old building. I imagine it was just efficiency.
They could have put some flourishes on it. Certainly, it doesn't have to be exactly the same, stone for stone. But they could at least have tried to make something beautiful rather than here's a block.
And it just seems lazy. And I understand that a lot of these, I don't know, brutalist architects and the more modernist architects are trying to often say something. But I don't understand what it is that you're saying that's meaningful.
Yeah, here's another great contrast. Let's go to the next one. Brussels versus Brusselization. If we just click on the concrete one to the side there. Look at that. It's just awful. And there are so many towns and suburbs.
The watermark at the corner, the aesthetic city.
Well, no,
city.
That's the Twitter handle.
Oh, okay.
But it's just worth pointing out that so many second-tier towns and cities are just filled with this type of architecture. It's much more common, like not so much in the capitals and so on, but certainly the town where we are, much of it is a concrete wasteland. It's dire.
I used to live in Manchester. In Manchester, honestly, if you go to the right parts, there's have some absolutely lovely architecture in it. There's a number of gorgeous churches and cathedrals in that city, but all of the new buildings look a lot more like this. Even without the concrete, they're just big glass blocks. And on a sunny day, it will just reflect the sun straight into your eye and blind you.
Absolutely. If we go to the next one, the memes are, of course, out in force.
Yep. I was thinking the second anybody mentioned the white cubes thing, I was thinking that Top Gear episode where Jeremy Clarkson, they've tagged it in that right there. Yeah. That's great.
I mean, that's just modern architecture in a nutshell there. And there's also... this one, if you go to the next one. Remember that horror movie where the serial killer wore the face of his victim as a mask? Have a look at facadism. Let's just click on some of these. So you've got a hideous building at the back and they've just built this facade on the front so you don't quite have to look at it so much.
This doesn't even look...
Go to the next one.
I mean, it doesn't even look real to me.
I know.
Good God.
Next one. It's just... That one's quite hard to see, and then when you see it, it's like, oh, God.
Yeah, the thing that I've done a video on this in the past, and the point that I bring up is that one of the things about old architecture, like the town that I come from, Nantwich, is still primarily made up of like old Tudor buildings and buildings from the 1600s, 1700s, and you walk around and there's so many reminders of everything that came before. It tells a story. What story?
And it's your story because you live there.
Yeah, and what story is this telling?
That we're embarrassed at the buildings we built.
Yes.
We go to the last one on this. Yeah. Like, what is that even trying to do there?
And if you care enough to build the facade, if you know that the building that you've made is hideous, just build a building that looks like the facade. It's so simple.
I know, right? And then the memes continue. So here we have a craftsman versus architect. Designed by a craftsman on the left. Looks beautiful. Traditional architecture designed by a Pritzker Prize winning architect.
That is a prison cell on the right. I would not want to live there.
It's awful, isn't it? You can imagine what that would do to people if you lived in a city where that was the building you lived in. Those were the buildings you looked at. That was where you went to visit your friends.
It's demoralizing.
Thoroughly. Completely demoralizing.
Thoroughly demoralizing. And it's the fact that most major cities across the world, certainly in the Western Anglosphere, you could say, are starting to rely far, far more on this type of architecture. So it is the globalist homogenization where everywhere you go will feel and look the same, have the same atmosphere.
Yeah, and the great point there is that with the traditional materials, obviously things that were built 100, 200 years ago had to rely much more on local materials. So you end up getting a local look. If your town is right next to a sandstone quarry, oh, surprise, surprise, the town looks like sandstone because it's made out of that. Whereas now everything is made out of concrete and glass and steel. It's not very nice. If we go to the next one as well, this is the standard response of why is old architecture so much better than modern architecture? It's just a cross-section of a modern architect's mind. Well, because beauty is completely subjective, so it doesn't exist. There's no point even talking about it, Harry. But also, they must have destroyed all of the ugly buildings, so it's only survivorship bias that we like the ones we see now.
Nazis only aimed for the ugly buildings.
And my architecture is more conceptual anyway, because I'm an artiste, and it's beautiful. And anyway, they're racist for criticizing.
I hate the whole, like, oh, it's conceptual, so it means the only way that I can understand and truly appreciate your work is if I have access to your inner thoughts and mind.
Yeah.
Great.
It's meant to ask a question, Harry, to make a statement, to have an impact. And it does all of those things, to be fair. It makes a bad statement. It has a bad impact.
Yeah. Who let these people design anything with anything other than just Legos?
I know. They should have been left playing with glue. I'll go to the next one.
Sniffing it more like.
What I love about modern architecture are all the big sunlight-filled windows. And then we have this.
That really does look like something out of Blade Runner, doesn't it?
There are so many modern architecture style buildings which just look like they're from sci-fi dystopias.
I know.
You take one look at them and you're like, God, the people who built this wanted us to live in misery.
I mean, we beat the Soviet Union, but they seem determined to bring the Soviet Union to us.
Right? It's the architectural equivalent of a punch in the face looking at that building, the aesthetic equivalent. I despise it. And of course, many of you will already know who we have to blame for this, but largely we can trace this back to one man.
Oh, can we?
Le Corbusier. And so Le Corbusier was the father of modernism in architecture. He was a Swiss-French architect, designer, painter, urban planner, writer, and one of the pioneers of what is now regarded as modern architecture. He wrote the Athens Charter. He was the most influential figure in the functional city movement. Functionalists, and this is in the 1930s, thought that by forcing everyone to live in cardboard boxes, they would somehow re-engineer the common man and deprive him of his despicable petty bourgeois conservative tendencies. They were trying to create a utopia through architecture.
So he was a socialist.
Yeah, but a lot of their activism was born of sheer narcissism rather than even socialism. They wanted to destroy the architecture of Europe and replace it with their stamp, their image, their art, and their ego. That over there is Le Corbusier's plan for Paris. If we click on that one there, I believe this is Paris. So you know you've been to Paris, right? Notre Dame, the Eiffel Tower.
Yes, there's quite a lot of striking architecture.
Beautiful traditional architecture. This is what he wanted to do. Knock it all down and put essentially what looks like Nazi air defense fortresses for people to live in instead.
Great.
Horrendous. And to take a quote from him, "Nothing is left to us of the architecture of past epochs, just as we can no longer derive any benefit from the literary and historical teaching given in schools," 1926. So Le Corbusier was literally saying, literature and history is worthless. Teaching them in schools is a waste of time.
I'm not surprised that a socialist doesn't care about everything that came behind them.
Mm-hmm. And if we continue with this thread... he continues, "So the principles of modern town planning have been developed by the work of countless technicians. Technicians in the art of building, technicians of health, technicians of social organization." The International Congress of Modern Architecture in 1933. If we click on the city of tomorrow there, that's not very nice, is it?
No, it's bland, it's boring, it's ugly.
Mm-hmm. But you'll notice that one thing they don't mention at all is technicians of beauty, because such a thing does not exist. They seem to believe that beauty cannot exist because it cannot be rationalistically defined fundamentally. And we go to another functionalist. We've got Philip Johnson here. "Three factors are responsible for the great post-war flowering of architecture." Yes, that's what he called it, flowering. Mm. I would choose another word that begins with an F. First, a generation of architects trained in schools that no longer teach the traditional styles has now begun to practice. And he was saying this out of praise, not out of lamentation. The battle for modern architecture has long been won, he continues. The international style which Henry Russell Hitchcock's book of 1932 heralded has ripened, spread, and been absorbed by the wide stream of historical progress in 1953. Look at that.
Once again, it just... These people only ever build things that end up looking like prisons.
Yeah, it's anti-human, fundamentally. Mm. We need a new architecture, a new modernism, a neo-modernism. If the choice is between scraping our way backwards with a neoclassicism or rediscovering economies of scale with new materials and new techniques, I say let the cause be neo-modernism. Max Hutchinson, and this time 1989. So this has been alive for a long period of time.
So these are the names I'm putting on my list.
Yeah, and let's point out, these are all eminent architects, wealthy, influential, prize-winning marauders who have laid waste to the city of the world with ghastly ideas about modern
prize-winning
architecture.
Prize-winning swindlers.
Yeah, and let's have a look at the portfolio of Le Corbusier. So his architectural sites were designated World Heritage Sites in 2016.
No.
Right. And I've taken three which are particularly egregious. If we go to the next image. I mean, what supervillain lives there, do you think?
It just looks like a big toilet.
Yeah.
There's the toilet bowl and there's the water.
Uh-huh. Amazing. This is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. This is basically the wonders of the modern architectural world. In the old days, they built the pyramids and the Great Wall of China and the Temple of Zeus and the Pharos Lighthouse, and we build the urinal.
The industry... Yeah, interesting thing I find about conservatism is that some people assume that, oh, I just want to conserve everything. No, part of it is being able to discern what is worth
conserving. I don't want to conserve this.
Yeah, definitely don't want to conserve this. I think, no, there's always a place for progress. There is always a place for room for us to all move forward collectively.
Like I said, it's a conversation between past and present.
Yes, and I think that knocking this down would provide some great room for us to move forward.
Yes. What about this one here? What do you reckon of this? Oh. Sumptuous, isn't it?
The contrast against the evidently beautiful natural landscape it's surrounded by just makes it all the more depressing.
I know.
Because one of the interesting things about architecture is the fact that oftentimes you need to... part of the splendor of it can be contrast. Mm-hmm. But this isn't a splendorous contrast.
Look at how thin those windows are as well.
Yeah.
Like just tiny slits of
prison cells.
It's awful. None of these are actual prisons, by the way. They're all like supposed to be office blocks, municipal buildings, or other museums and things. Yeah, and then the final one here. Slightly better in the better light, but this is in Japan, proving that the ideological follies of the West do not stay in the West.
Le Corbusier. Was he French?
He was Swiss-French.
Swiss-French. Oh, God, just like Rousseau.
It's all coming together.
No, it happened again.
Oh, dear. And just in case you are getting tempted by the idea that beauty is unimportant, beauty is important, and we, in fact, did a whole contemplations on it. Josh and Thomas did this, What Makes Someone Beautiful, or Something Beautiful, and it's very much worth your time. I quite enjoyed watching it. But moving back to architecture, there is a big difference, I think, between modern art and modern architecture and... This is the following. The house is not a one shot. It is not some impactful art piece you can put up in an art gallery, get a handful of people to see it and shower it with undeserved praise, and then it disappears. A house is something that stays there, that people live in, that people walk past, that shapes the physical landscape of humankind for decades or centuries to come. It is much more important, so you have to live in it. And you can tell that the revealed preferences of modern architects themselves is not for modern architecture, because according to this survey conducted by the trade association Sveriges Arkitekter, at least 80% of all architects in Sweden live in houses built before 1920, before modern architecture.
See, this is almost forming, like coming together with my conspiracy theory I'm coming up with in my head that you could say, which is these are all actually knowingly terrible architects who know that what they're creating are big boxes, but they're lazy enough that they just want to dress it up in some modernist, faux, pretentious wrappings and call it a day. Because all I need to do is get the ruler out, one line, big rectangle, jobs are good and get to it, boys.
Well, that may well be the case, but it's just alarming that they're such obvious hypocrites as well as vandals. Like the fact that, well, obviously I'm going to build this hideous concrete box for
and
my
tell
clients,
you why it's good for you.
Right, and good for humanity, but I'm going to live in a nice traditional house, so thank you very much. Yeah, very nice. Now, there is something of a revolution in the offing, a countercultural activist conservative movement, no doubt full of nasty populists, who are campaigning tirelessly for a renaissance or a renaissance of beautiful classical architecture. So let's just play this quick clip here.
So nice scrutiny.
Cities these days
there.
Aren't built like they used to be, but it doesn't have to be that way. Join us in Utrecht this summer to rediscover the lost art of designing and building beautiful, sustainable cities. With top-class tutors from all over the world, this intensive 3-week program is a unique opportunity to learn how to create places that will last for generations, combining the latest insights with timeless principles. For more information and to apply, visit www.beautifulcity.nl. Let's build a beautiful city.
Now, I don't know enough about these people to endorse them or anything, so don't take that as an endorsement of us saying you should go and do this or anything, but I'm using them as an example to show that there are people trying to push back against this and train people into how to build beautiful towns and cities and things. There are lots of courses out there all over the world, and some of them online. This is just one that I've taken as an example, but it is an uphill battle. The modern architects have all the institutional control. They have the wealth. They have the support of billionaires and ultimately all of the building contracts, and especially government building contracts. It will take a monumental effort, pun intended, to bring beauty back to our towns and cities and break the stranglehold of the cult of anti-human architecture. But if there's one thing that a billionaire philanthropist could achieve to make the world a more beautiful, less miserable place, I'm looking at you, Elon Musk, it's to get behind the movement to revive beautiful architecture. And there's another handle here with that lovely Scruton quote, "Beauty is vanishing from our world because we live as though it did not matter." I think that's quite profound.
Yes.
And it's not just in architecture. So as we put this up in the background, and we have an image of a house designed by an architect and a house designed by someone who's not an architect.
Yes, I've seen this picture in particular going around a lot recently.
Yeah. One of them is stunning, the other is hideous.
It really does make you think what we've lost.
Mm. And it's the fact that they're a similar floor plan as well, and by the looks of it, a similar biome, so you can't make those excuses.
Mm.
Anyway, so there's another important lesson to be drawn from this. The decline in quality, beauty, and practicality of our buildings is a direct result of the decline in quality, beauty, and practicality of our ideas. So modern architecture has gained its wealth and prominence through essentially institutional capture by infiltrating the schools and colleges of architecture and playing smart politics to gain the backing of wealthy corporations and governments to commission them to build these monstrosities. Our ideas are less visible, but the decay of elite moral fashions into intersectionalism and woke is the intellectual version of modern architecture, I think it's fair to say. Like the modern architects, woke activists have played and won at power politics to the point where they staff the institutions of the media and universities, force entire nations to play their virtue-signaling ideological games, and receive billions of dollars from megacorporations to promote activist causes that ultimately degrade society. Like modern architecture, these ideas are laying waste to our world and turning it into a miserable place for humans to live. So a stand for beautiful architecture is a stand for beautiful ideas, and it's one that I think we should all support.
I concur. Excellent. And before we get into the video comments, just a reminder for everybody still watching that there is the live book club going on with me and Carl later where we're talking about Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, just as a reminder for everyone. So let's check this out, the video comments.
Hey guys, so you did a story on pronouns yesterday, and I am starting to see this at work in the professional world. People are putting their pronouns in their signature blocks. It seems silly, but we're supposed to take it seriously. And I'm really considering stealing a thought from Matt Walsh and declaring my own adjectives. From now on, I am strength, lust, and power. Those are my adjectives. And you better take it serious.
I mean, use their own logic against them, right? I mean, pronouns, generally speaking, are not something that you designate to yourself, at least historically speaking. Like Matt Walsh pointed out, it's something that people, I see you, I recognize male, therefore he. whereas now it's you're being forced to use other people's preferred pronouns.
It's compelled speech.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. That was Jordan Peterson's point with Bill C-16.
Mm-hmm.
Let's carry on.
The city was sleeping. Faceless combines the detective novel with aspects of gaming culture and builds a world fleshed out with locations and characters that could be the basis of future books. Lacking the punning of Gerry Anderson's Dick Spanner, the writing style is nonetheless engaging. There is some propensity to use they-them pronouns, which should be avoided in future.
The hat check girl had checked my hat.
Thank you very much, Alex. I don't know where you find all this interesting old footage. I've not heard of Dick Spanner before, but it looked entertaining at the very least.
Okay, Lotus Eaters, it's Easter Monday, and I've been helping Dad work on the bus some more. So we've got plug and switch cut into the countertop there. We've got the fridge installed in its cabinet. Dad built this really neat... cabinet for the kitchen there, and we've got the microwave and the range hood hooked up.
Coming along.
Nice.
This video comment is going to be a big thank you to two members of the Lotus Eaters community that helped me make some content for the satire news site The Windsorian. We have a new guest author going by the stage name of Ardent Party. He wrote for us an article about the first International Trans Abandonment Day, where people give away their children over the state. It's a pretty good article. And additionally, I'd like to thank Tony D of Tony D and Little Joan for writing another hilarious article about Joe Biden capturing the invisible man. That's right, he thought he was shaking hands with nothing whatsoever, but really, he was capturing the invisible man. Read about it on The Windsorian.
Maybe we need to give Joe a bit more credit than we often do.
Yeah.
No, shout out to The Windsorian, then. I might have to check out some of that myself.
Yeah, brilliant.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines, the Legend of the Black Dog. This is a very common folktale in many different cultures, including England, but usually when it's in another culture, the black dog is considered an evil spirit, a bad omen. But in South Jersey, the ghost dog is considered a positive spirit, a spirit that helps people. Even in the afterlife, you gotta love doggos.
Yeah, so there's obviously the Grim, which is a big black dog that shows up in the third book of Harry Potter, which is supposed to be a bad omen.
Yes.
Prisoner of Azkaban.
But turns out...
No spoilers. Some people might not have read it yet.
If you say so, John.
But then there's also Churchill, who, when he went into his bouts of depression, described it as his black dog.
Oh, yes, that's become quite a famous analogy for depression nowadays. Oh, the black dog is hounding me, etc. But, yeah, I think, yes, let's start putting dogs back in their proper place as the number one friend of humanity. If I see a black dog crossing my path at night, then I'm more likely to give it a little pat on the head, as long as it's friendly.
Yeah.
Hi, guys, you're right. Just a quick one. Big Brother Watch have a petition, which is basically for the online safety bill, which will remove the provisions about harmful speech that is legal. Essentially, they're trying to make it so that tech platforms have to remove harmful speech, even though it is legal, they still have to remove it. So there's a petition online called Do Not Restrict Our Right to Freedom of Expression Online. It's 44,000 signatures right now, so go and sign it. Cheers, guys.
Thank you very much for that. I will give that a sign. Freedom of expression online. I'll just make sure I've got that up. There we go. Was that all the video comments, John?
I think so. Let's go to the written comments. So we have Justin B. on the Ramadan riots, who says, I expect the main reason why the media isn't mentioning who is doing the riots is the same reason our media won't mention the grooming gangs. They're afraid of hurting the narrative of open borders and even more afraid of jackets of peace.
In all likelihood, they're probably afraid of... There's a number of different factors. One,
I think they're just, like, generally de-localized afraid.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of being called racist, for one, is one of the typical ones that you get. That's why a lot of the grooming gangs were able to get a lot. Oh, here's the petition to do not restrict our right to freedom of expression online. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in that, go check it out. Give it a sign if you want. We get to 100,000 and the government has to debate it in Parliament, don't
Good,
they?
Good, yes.
Yes, so hopefully, I mean, sadly, a lot of these don't end up having much of an effect, but it does always if nothing else, reveal the government's attitude towards the whole situation, which is screw you, normal person.
It's interesting. I think that's changed. It's 100,000 signatures. It will be considered for debate in Parliament, whereas I think it used to be automatic.
I think it's always been considered, but okay. Then again, but I mean, that maybe considered is always a provision for if they go, oh, we don't want to talk
which
about
is
this.
Sensible, to be fair. Imagine if the site got hacked, for example.
Well, that is sensible,
it
but
would,
at the same
much
time...
Much though, it would be amusing to get Parliament to talk about something completely esoteric. I don't know. Something like anime or something for a parliamentary debate.
Parliamentary debate best waifus.
Any hackers out there?
Yeah, I bet Boris would have a very full list.
Oh dear. Longshanks1690 says, it is fascinating that the more details the mainstream leaves out of their reporting, the more I know. The more details they include, the less I feel informed.
Yes, sadly you do have to take the mainstream media with a lot of double speak.
Yeah. Freewill2112 says, we have cut them too much slack and they are taking advantage of it. They never would have done this 100 years ago. They would have been dealt with severely. Now our countries bend over backwards for anyone's behaviour but our own. This is causing resentment. It must be the same laws and standards for everyone or society will break down and balkanise. Though perhaps this is what some groups with agendas want. Well, I mean, it's true in the sense that, yeah, like, the rule of law means there is one law and everyone, more or less, follows it, is subject to it, is policed equally. And that's not what happens, of course. We have multiple groups who are not policed the same way as other groups and so on. And we have groups which are literally a law unto themselves. They have their own law and that's what they follow.
Yeah, there are the old videos of people going around, even in places like Australia, and just trying to ask Muslims questions in the street, for instance.
And the police turned up to shut it down.
Police turn up and say, oh, you can't talk to them or else there will be trouble. Trouble caused by who? I'm just asking questions. Yeah. No, there just will be.
That was a Lauren Southern incident.
Yes, that was a Lauren Southern. And then a load of people showed up to shout that she was a racist because she was like, I think she just was basically like, yes, Muslims exist and racist. It was very embarrassing, to be honest.
Not allowed to mention the M word.
Yes, but honestly, anybody caught involving themselves in anything like this, I would just kick out of the country immediately as a start.
Yeah. Minarchist Monarchist says, the thing that insulated me most of all from this immigration and Islam apologia was growing up in a majority immigrant neighbourhood. My entire childhood, I experienced firsthand how the majority of Muslim immigrants have no desire to integrate themselves into the culture they live in at all. Quite on the contrary, a lot of them were actively hostile towards German culture and language and desired nothing more than to create a miniature Turkey, Iran or Syria on German soil. All my life, everyone who talked unironically about the wonderful benefits of mass immigration or the peacefulness of Islam immediately outed themselves as either out of touch with reality or an outright liar, both cases immediately making me disregard their opinion.
Quite rightfully so. I think I've always said one of the greatest preventatives for falling into this line of thinking is just to actually try and understand and meet some of these people, and then you'll understand that, oh yes, they really don't care about our country or our culture or anything to do with us, really. They just want to colonize us.
Yeah. Zenchan says, if burning books is considered extremism, what are we calling suicide bombers these days? Pretty good point.
Mostly peaceful explosions. I don't know what you're on about.
Urban pyrotechnics.
Yeah, there you go. It's just a firework display, guys.
Severian Knox says, we shouldn't call it migrant crisis, but Merkel crisis. Credit where it is due.
Well, I suppose if we have to give credit for something, then...
Longshanks says, if they had attacked the Swedish parliament too, the left would be the sweating guy looking at the most peaceful protests and attack on our democracy buttons meme.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Just kidding. It's only an attack on democracy when the right people are doing it.
Yeah, the whole... I feel like the term democracy has been weaponized against people, and it's one of the things that's making me hate the very idea of it now. It's like, well, if... It's the same thing that all the communists always try to justify everything on. Oh, this is just democracy taken to its final form. And to be honest, it is.
Yeah.
That, logically speaking, that's the end point of it.
Paul Neubauer says, there was a Florida man, not DeSantis, who had a public Quran burning, and in response, members of some mosques in Afghanistan murdered several aid workers. Oddly, no one riots when a Bible is burned.
Yeah, and it's interesting how international it is as well. It can happen all the way over in Florida, and people in Afghanistan think, this is my problem.
Yeah. Baron von Warhawk says, if you feel bad for these protesters getting offended when their holy book gets burned, remember they burn our flags and Bibles and prisoners in cages. Probably not the same guys, but yeah, I know what you mean. It's certainly ISIS are known for doing that. Personally, I don't blame them. I blame the people who let these barbarians through the gates. At least the Goths had to actually knock down the walls before they could riot in Rome, yet Sweden was willing to leave the doors wide open. Yeah.
Not just Sweden either.
No, no, the entirety of Europe, apart from a couple of Eastern European holdouts who are essentially being castigated for it.
Yes.
And finally, on this section, Armand O says, it's almost as if the left don't believe Muslims are humans, capable of rational thought and responsible for their actions. Similar to how the left views black people. 2020, mostly peaceful protests, anyone? Actually, if the left doesn't view anyone but themselves as human and capable of reason and rationality, it explains quite a bit about why they want to control the entire world. Funny, that.
It is funny. It is funny, and it does explain it. They all think that we're all too stupid. They also seem to have this strange idea that the bigger and more complex something gets, then the more central planning it needs, despite the fact that surely that's a self-contradicting argument, because the bigger and more complicated something gets, the harder it is to plan it.
Well, no, but that's true. I think he has quite a profound second statement there. If they've only viewed themselves as capable of reason, then, like, obviously the rationalist dictum is to have the entire world organized through reason, which implicitly means your reason, my reason. So the whole world must be organized the way I want. And so that does mean that you have to have these central planning institutions and so on and so forth, because the implication is that I can then potentially be the person at the top directing it. The fact that the vast majority of these people never are.
And will in fact face the wall.
Yeah.
And I do always find it funny, because I think, while I understand the whole, oh, it's the rationalists' argument, I never see how these people are particularly rational when it can be shown throughout the 20th century to fail time and time again, and then go, well, all we need to do is have it be me in charge this time.
Well, the problem is that that would be induction. That would be working out what to do by induction, by how things have worked in the past or not, which is leaning on experience. It's an experiential view of what's good and what's not. And these people don't really like experience unless it's lived experience, and then only if it's lived experience as part of a group and so on, which is a slightly different strand, because
they don't care about the lived experience of the Eastern Europeans.
The people who lean on lived experience are not rationalists. It's fundamentally anti-rationalist. But they want to forget all of the experience of human history, all of the lessons learned, all of the experiments and induction done, in order to reorder things according to a purely intellectual exercise that has no bearing on reality. That's fundamentally what rationalism is about. It's nothing to do with being rational or irrational or anything like that.
Yes, that is true. Anyway, moving on to the Ethan Klein segment. So the Minicus Monarchist says, I'm just unable to muster any sort of empathy for Ethan's situation. He got by doing edgy humor and making fun of woke people. Then as soon as he gets a good amount of success, he kicked the ladder out from under him, started calling everyone who did what he used to do far right, and supported the cancel mobs. He deserves to sleep in the bed that he made. What's interesting about that is I don't know about people like iDubbbz if they've slid further to the left than they were before, but he in fact had a podcast very recently after this situation with iDubbbz, who used to, along with people like Filthy Frank and Max Mofo, make very edgy, very, very non-PC jokes back in the day. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how he can pick and choose which of those people he wants to still associate with, whereas Jordan Peterson, completely verboten from being able to see associate with him. But someone like iDubbbz, I can still hang around with him, no problem. Mm-hmm. I find that interesting, the way they pick and choose. Freewill2112 says, in Stalin's Russia, people who worked with him and had to constantly reassert their ally status because of the fear of being cancelled, literally. Mm. That's true. S.H. Silver says, I'm already seeing excuses from the further left saying that Ethan was never a real leftist. I mean, he did throw out a far-right dog whistle, after all. Mm-hmm. And then cancelling, and this cancelling is just what liberals do to each other, because we all know that the purity spiralling is core to the centrist liberal ideas and not the one sucking off the progressive leftist heat. One of the interesting things is, one of the clips I left out from his apology stream was the fact that they had a literal segment of it dedicated to what they said was, the left is eating itself. And it's very interesting that he still chooses to associate with those people, despite the fact he can obviously recognize it. I mean, Ethan's not a smart guy. He's not really that smart. In his podcasts that he's done with Hassan, as Carl has pointed out a number of times, he makes Hassan look smart.
Wow, that's
which
an achievement.
Which is impressive in and of itself. But he can still recognize the left eats itself. But then, instead of actually taking responsibility and taking that to its logical conclusion, he instead goes, but I still, don't worry, guys, I still hate Tim Pool and Steven Crowder and all those guys. They're still all vile scum. Can you believe what they're saying about gay people being groomers in schools? And proves himself to be yet another person who seemingly can't read seven pages if they actually look at the anti-groomer bill. Anyway, Based Ape says, Ethan's apology is hilarious because it shows that all this community cares about is saying what you're told to say to signal your allegiance to the cult, like a child rolling his eyes while being forced to say the Hail Mary for his sins. I'm sorry for doing X, blah, blah, ally, blah, solidarity, blah, blah, do better. There, I said the thing. We good now? Yeah, that's actually a really good summation of his attitude towards the whole thing. He knows he's just going through the motions, but he just wants to stay on side. Benjamin Charles, I'd love to help Ethan in his latest travails, but I seem to be paralyzed by fits of hysterical, breathless laughter. Well, to be fair, it sounds like you're having more fun than anyone on the H3 podcast is. Jesus. Alpha of the Betas says, please, please, please never, ever talk of Ethan Klein ever again. I can't make that promise because something amusing might happen again in the future. So... Kevin M says, a funny thing with former free speech warriors like H3H3, they feel guilt over Trump getting elected as though they are personally responsible for it happening, and now they must renege on their ways to make amends, hence the sudden backflip where they suddenly stand against everything they formerly stood for. The funny thing about that in itself is when Trump got elected, Ethan made a video saying, like, guys, stop freaking out. You know, he's not the guy I would have voted for, but we need to at least give him a chance. And how in just a few years, he's completely changed his tune on that whole thing. Mm. And now, you know, he hates Tim Pool and thinks that Steven Crowder is one of the most vile human beings to ever existed. Kristen Johnson says, H3H3 has been a snake from the start. He rose to prominence by leeching off bigger YouTubers and stabbing them in the back like Keemstar, Leafy, and Pyro. Mm. True. And Free Will again says, Ethan Klein, if you join Team Intolerant, what can you expect?
And that's the ultimate lesson of this, isn't it? What goes around comes around. Well, there's a really nice way of saying that in Japanese. I always forget it. It's a lovely quote. Anyway, on the subject of architecture, Andrew Narog says, the degradation of architecture is sadly not limited to just that field, but extends to nearly all Western culture over the past 100 years. The art of modernity so often falls short of the masters of old.
Yes.
It's true. Ben van der Plaats says, this architecture segment is particularly interesting to me. Oh, thank you. I work for a stone cutter cutting limestone, which is used in both large blocky forms and intricate designs. I've done work on nearly every style of architecture that involves stone, and a lot of concrete buildings use a limestone facade because of its natural appearance. It's odd being tied to the old and new, particularly when the new is being hated on so much. Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting job, actually.
It does, and don't worry, Ben, we don't blame you specifically. You're just producing what people want from you.
And I also want to say, you shouldn't take this segment as a blanket denunciation of every building that has been built in the last 20, 30 years. There are some buildings out there, some of them even out of glass, actually look quite nice.
Have you got any examples of glass buildings that look nice?
Yes, but I don't have them on me for the second. But there are some. It's just that you have to be quite careful and... Yeah, there are a lot of factors to it, but fundamentally, most of what's built, especially in second towns, second tier cities, is just hideous. It's just cheap, nasty, concrete, glass, boom, there you go, and you better like it. Mm-hmm. Anyway. XYNZE says, the number of development requirements, such as accessibility, add to the cost of construction. It's also about the cost at the end of the day. But some things are just an abomination done on purpose, such as the giant dump that the French, of all people, are intending to take on Notre Dame.
No, what are they planning on doing Notre Dame? I've not looked into this.
Yeah, you look that up while we're checking. So, yeah, like, there is this argument, oh, but it's cost-effective and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but fundamentally, is it cost-effective when you have to then knock it down and build another hideous thing, and then knock that down and build another hideous thing? I feel like a lot of it is done just so that you can keep the builders and architects in a job, redesigning and rebuilding things. Maybe that's my conspiratorial bent showing itself. But still, if you build something beautiful that will last for 100, 200, 300 years, then actually that's cheap in the long run. The problem, perhaps, is that people are too short-termist. So have you found out what the... what he was talking
about? I've not seen it yet. I'm trying to see if I can find some plans.
Hello World says, coming from Manchester, we're sorry, it's honestly disgraceful what the Labour Council does to its buildings. I used to venture into the Crescent Pub in Salford, a Grade 2 listed building which is now abandoned and decrepit.
I used to go to the Crescent all the time because it's where I was at Or did I? No, I'm completely wrong. I used to go to the Pint Pot in Salford. Ignore me.
I think a lot of these buildings is in response to people not being brought up in the area and therefore have no attachment to the place. The only thing that remains is hubris. Yes, and I can tell you who certainly doesn't have any attachment to the place. The architects.
No.
Like, that's kind of the fundamental thing underwriting their activity is that they're ruining the physical environment for someone else. Like, and most of them, as we discover, live in old-fashioned buildings anyway.
Yes.
X, Y, and Z says, some modern architecture can be great. The Sydney Opera House. But it shares the skyline with Harry Seidler's tumescent Blues Point Tower and James Packer's junk Crown Casino. Seriously, it's a big glass dong dominating the harbour.
Oh, I think I've found it. Apologies that you won't be able to see this, but... Let's...
Oh my god.
Yeah, I'll send John the link so that we can just get that up quickly.
Well, it looks like glass is back on the menu, boys.
Oh, God. I'd rather eat glass than see that put to...
Dan Arthur says, we need a Gothic revival. Architectural building codes are one type of government regulation I can get behind. If done well, and you know for a fact they won't be.
Let's see. There it is for everyone to see. Can't you wait? France... rejuvenated. All of France's problems done because we're going to have this beauty erected instead. This is just suggestions and inspirations by the looks of it. But still, the very fact that something as awful and hideous as this is even being suggested sickens me.
It'll look like botanical gardens when it's done.
It will.
Gosh. No, I'm sure that won't get through. Longshanks says, I know Prince Charles gets a lot of criticism, rightly so, but his contempt for modern architecture and attempts to reinforce traditionalism in buildings is something I appreciate about him. Yes, and he built the town of Poundbury, which is designed by a Luxembourgish pro-traditional architect, Leon Creus, I think it is. And the attempt is noteworthy. However, I feel like the execution leaves something to be desired. But that's, I think actually Rory has got an article that might be coming out about that.
Probably.
Or Josh. Well, we'll see. People2112 says, beautiful architecture reminds people of the greatness of our civilization. Those who don't want our civilization to be great don't want to create anything that reminds people of that fact. And that's absolutely true.
That
Beach
is.
Demon says, having dealt with architects professionally for over a decade, the arrogance and impracticality of many has struck me. New construction lacks both beauty and functionality of older buildings. Future generations will condemn us for these blights.
I can only hope so.
There are so many lovely comments, but unfortunately we don't have time to go through them all.
Yes, that is about all the time we've got. Just another reminder, once again, live book club at 3:30 for our premium subscribers between me and Carl talking about Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier. Thank you very, very much for joining us. I'll see all of you at half past three. And until then, have a great day.